This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 19th of August, 1960. The title of this lecture is Auditor Weakness. This lecture is 35 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. Well, we fortunately have caught up with you. And it's always a difficulty catching up with some of the members of a unit of this character, because their cases might have been on a zig, you see, just before the unit, but after they get into the unit, they decide that it'll be more baffling if they zag. The gist of assessment has come under very heavy inspection from me, just because it is the weakest point in auditor application of Scientology throughout the world. It isn't just here, throughout the world, it's the weakest point. We get adjectival assessments of one kind or another. As you know, every preclear processed in HGC on any continent has a complete weekly report of his case, you see, submitted here to St. Hill. Therefore, we know very well what is happening, all the difficulties that are being had, and so forth. And that's an awful lot of preclears. Now, stacking these up, adding them up, one sees at once the various difficulties which auditors have with cases, completely aside from difficulties you might have had. The broad look is then available. And the first frailty is not assessment. The first frailty is 8C. That is to say, getting somebody to do as an auditor what they were supposed to do on the PC. All sorts of little dramas occur in this particular line, and they're rather fascinating. I don't mean to be ironic, sardonic, or cynical about this, but it's a little game we play. And I have every confidence in the vast majority of staff auditors. Every once in a while, somebody tell you, well, if a staff auditor was any good, he'd be out in the field making lots of money. And so forth. You hear some kind of thing like that, and that's nonsense. That's utter nonsense. As a matter of fact, the backbone of excellent auditing throughout the world is done in HGCs by staff auditors. I don't wish to hurt anybody's feelings in the field about this. I'm just telling you it's a fact. The case gain from field reports, which we also get, and the case gain from HGC reports actually don't compare well. Now, the basic reason for that is 8C. Hasn't really anything to do with whether the staff auditor is better than the field auditor is better than the staff auditor, or anything like this. It has to do with a staff auditor is up against a buzzsaw known as the DP, who is up against a buzzsaw known as the SOCSEC, who is up against a buzzsaw known as the HCOSEC, who, of course, is up against the main buzz. Now, by George, it almost takes almost that much 8C to get it run. Now, you take a fellow sitting there. He wants to help. His heart is good. He tries to do the PC the best he can do. And the PC sits there saying, yeah, 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 and so on, and what's wrong with me, and so on, so on, and so on, and you didn't help me last week, and you couldn't possibly help me this week, and so forth. Now, that's actually quite a little bit to confront for a staff auditor. It's an awful lot to confront to a field auditor. The field auditor, under his own steam, very often succumbs to this and runs something new, strange, and wonderful. And he loses. Because PC doesn't know what's wrong with him. If he knew what was wrong with him, he wouldn't be a PC. They're just files. And the game is to find what undercuts his objections. That's all. It's just to find out what he can confront and make him confront it and bring him up along the line one way or the other with proper processing. Wherever you see a contest of this character going on, you've got some PC who's trying to give an auditor a lose. All he is doing is dramatizing failure to help. Now, what is wrong with his case? Failure to help. And PCs dramatize their case, that's all. And that is the main background, backbone, fundamental, and core of a PC's case. He has failed to help. Help never got anybody in trouble. But failing to help did. And the only place you've got big stack-ups on your own case or in a PC's case is when you didn't help and didn't even not help. Now, a staff auditor once in a while might believe that some case was really doing him in. The truth of the matter is he's at least not helping. And that is to say he's at least trying on the negative side of the picture. I'll give you an example of this. I was absolutely sure at one time that it was a complete failure to handle a regiment of French soldiers as health in the West Indies. Complete failure that had gotten me stacked up a little bit in the West Indies. Didn't have anything to do with it. There was a stuck point on the track at that point, but it didn't have anything to do with the case. Didn't run, didn't work, didn't do anything. Now, it stemmed from some time before when I'd not even tried. They didn't even make an effort to help. Wasn't even concerned enough about it to withhold help. That stacked up. And the apparency was, you see, that one got a stack up because he had failed to help. That was the apparency. But just earlier than that, we find no help at all, either given or received. Now, that is the low point of anything. What enormous failure to help must have occurred just before then to put one in a frame of mind where he wouldn't even not help, wouldn't even announce to himself, you see, that there was no point in helping, just didn't think that anything like that concerned him. That's an interesting state of mind. I remember a bunch of wounded being brought off of a beach in the South Pacific in World War II in a landing craft, which, when it came alongside of the steep steel walls of the transports, crashed heavily against the plating because of the enormous sea running. The wounded was lying on the boards of the landing craft, their faces probably not more than 3 or 4 inches above the bottom of the craft. And as it crashed into the sides, the front ramp trips released. Well, there was no, of course, a landing craft, big 50-footer in a heavy sea, there's no holding one up. A bosun standing there alongside of rolled-up landing nets just stood there looking. Didn't have anything to do with him. A lieutenant commander of vast importance. Nobody ever seen a more important man. I tell you, we conducted a research on this particular fellow. We found out there'd never been anybody more important in the whole beginning of the universe. Not since the whole start of it all. This fellow, at least, was high enough toned to fall back from the rail when this happened and collide with me, who had absolutely nothing to do with that ship, that place or location. And I shoved him back toward the nets beginning to do something. And he said, well, I don't want to have any part of the responsibility for this. And ducked under my arm and raced up the ladder and disappeared into some other part of the ship. He at least was not helping. And it was necessary to at once and instantly get down cargo hooks and something like that into the ship before it sank completely, you see, and get that net unrolled and do something in a hurry. So I just sounded like all of the officers they had ever heard since they joined the Navy and got the boats and the other men there into action. We got the wounded aboard without losing them. Landing craft went down like a stone. This particular incident was interesting to me only from a standpoint that it brought home to me that there was some kind of a fundamental difference in the way I've operated and the way other people operated under similar circumstances. I'd never noticed it before. I'd never inspected it. And since that time, I've thought of that incident, not from the standpoint of drama or mercy or anything like that. I've just thought of the various reactions of those people. Because, you see, there were at least 100 men and 50 officers within sight of the incident, none of whom moved to do a thing. Now, one could say they were all accustomed to the sudden death of amphibious combat in the South Pacific. One could say an awful lot of things. But it struck me at that time that something must have gotten into the human race. It just came to me that this was not a type of action which I myself could easily embrace or assimilate or understand. And it was just a hang-up. And after that, I started looking. I started looking very hard. I said, there's something going on. Now, at that time, I couldn't articulate in English anything even vaguely resembling the basic principles which might underlie this situation. I could not articulate any of the laws of human behavior. I did know there was a way out, and I did know the fundamental laws and rules which governed human impulses. But up to that time, it was sort of an esoteric study, you know. It really didn't apply too desperately to anybody. But after that, well, I said I'd better look. I said I'd better look hard and try hard to find out what this was all about, so that it could be communicated and so that somebody else could understand it. Perhaps of all things, that has been the most difficult trick. Now, the understanding of these things now exists, and that understanding is communicable. And it runs into two stumbling blocks. The first of those stumbling blocks is the very factor I just described to you, the situation of how could all these men and all these officers just stand by? How could they just stand there? And the highest toned one of all, run away. Well, you're up against that same situation, whether you like it or not. You're looking at a world out here where people will tell you that there is no reason to do anything about anything, and there's nothing you could do about it anyway, and it's probably all over-evaluated in its importance. They say, well, there's a bunch of fellows who are probably ought to be in straitjackets, walking around in circles, monkeying around with fissions and buttons of one kind or another, and dreaming up weapons, taking no responsibility for what they dream up. These add up into, quote, national defense, where, as a matter of fact, national defense be damned. Probably the most dangerous thing you could possibly do would be to hold in your hand a threat against the lives of the whole world. That is a defensive action? Oh, no, it's not. That's not even vaguely a defensive action, and yet that's what they're doing, and they say this is defense. Now, the way we're defending ourselves is threatening to kill the lot. Now, people can be stirred up to a point of emergency, usually, and turn on such people. You very often will find cops and citizens alike will turn on some madman who is waving a gun around in the middle of the street. Well, they'll duck and they'll dive and so forth, but they'll still try to tackle this fellow. But nobody's tackling these boys. Nobody's doing anything about that. They say, well, it's too big. You can't confront it. What's the difference? And so on. One great physicist, whose name you might even recognize, told me just before he died, I'm going to die anyway, so it won't have anything to do with me. And I looked at him and I said, ha, ha, exclamation point. I looked him in the eye and I said, well, when you come back and pick up a body, I hope about the time you're 5 or 6 or something like that, you remember these words. And look around and find out if it has anything to do with you. And he looked at me, you know, and he said, but he couldn't carry it off. Well, if a universe is running with which nobody has anything to do, I wouldn't say it's going to be there very long, and I wouldn't say that it's running. So your first stumbling block is the fact that we are that small minority who still believe there is something that can be done about it. That's a very small minority. And you go out and you try to recruit people's interest in what you're doing, and they tend to give you a failure. Why? Well, they tend to give you a failure. You can, of course, do it, and you have many successes, but nevertheless, you still run into some failures. And when these people turn around and look at you and so on, they're just telling you that it's a total failure of help. There is no help possible. You couldn't even not help the international situation. Well, now, there is your first bad point. And that is the basic point which confronts dissemination. And that's also the basic point which bucks you when you're talking to a preacher. Whatever other mechanics are involved with it, that thing is expressed. As soon as you start processing somebody, he immediately thinks that no help is possible. Now, a newspaper reporter was being processed, and I think he made the classic remark of all time. He said, well, I will just sit here with an open mind. I won't impede anything you do, nor help you, but I will just sit here. Now go ahead and do what you're going to do. Well, that was very interesting. Now we have gambits now to approach that situation with. We know the button it's sitting on. An auditor who's up in a greengrocer's store one day, and just after I'd wrapped up some of this stuff about pre-sessioning to get people interested, you know. And he tried to talk to somebody about it, some clerk. And Bella said, I don't know, nothing to do, you know, mutter, mumble, as usual. And he said to him quite brightly something on the order of, well, don't know his exact words, but have you failed to help anybody in your lifetime? Oh, yeah, right there, right now. A guy had failed to help his father, and he'd failed to help his brother, and so forth. But he was in communication. Well, all right, the enlisting or eliciting of aid or assistance depends on cracking that one button, whatever other button gets rendered asunder. It puts a person into communication and so forth. You can at least find out who he's failed to help. Now, talking about starting cases, we've got that wrapped up. If you care to look at it hard, understand it completely, and get in there and pitch, you'll at least pick up this person in the last great failure. Because the periods of help, and no help, ensue after enormous failures to help. There is no such thing as a thetan who never did. Now, you can trigger a case with that piece of understanding all by itself. So don't let me catch you as an auditor in this class being stalled by a case. I don't care what you do about it. Wrap your mind around that piece of understanding and pre-sessioning and have at it. I don't care what you say to him. I'm not going to write you a script. You're not a television actor. You want to knock that point out somehow or loosen that point up on the case. I don't care if you sit there and agonizingly with your knees on the PC's chest until he answers the question. Who has he failed to help? Ask repetitively. It's all right with me, but you can break that point. He's not helping you or a staff auditor or whoever it is that's auditing this person, because he knows that if he did, it would be a total failure. And that the safest thing to do is to sit there with an open mind. And there are 25 people in this unit that are sitting there as PCs with open minds. That's too many. Oh, I know that sounds awfully accusative. You're waiting for something to happen. Waiting for the auditor to do something. Well, I'm telling the auditor now what to do. I don't care how you do it. Let's kick this button to pieces. Let's not forget our fundamentals. You're going to have something very interesting occur in a PC. His toe and arm's not been satisfactory. The PC is ARC breaky. PC is saying, well, no change. Well, your entrance point of saline, live or die, is very good. Changes in orientation and adjustment, works like mad. Well, what's live or die? But asking him the best way to help, is the best way to help to live, or is the best way to help to die? And people that are too far gone will tell you the best possible way I could help anybody is to back out and quit and stop. And that isn't what you want this person to do. And so it is that lack of ability or something of the sort in the person's consideration has wound him up in a spot where help is not possible. And I don't care what lip service this person is giving, what's happening, that is what's wrong. Take it from the old man. There's been too big a failure to help, which has utterly paralyzed the case's reactions on the subject. So get it out of that case. You're not satisfied with the progress of a case? Every time you blast in toward pre-sessioning, go right straight ahead with live or die and so forth. But when you come to help, don't toss it off with, well, how do you feel about help? All right, now that would be the smallest gradient of the whole thing. That would be so tiny and microscopic compared to what you can do with that button that it's something like using atomic fission to blow your nose. The heaviest point that you can hit would be, list for me now the people you have failed to help. Make the person go over just those points. And that'd be the way to handle your pre-session help button. If you can blow that button in the human race, you won't have 50 officers and umpteen dozen men standing around letting wounded drown. What held them? What held them motionless? They knew that if they did anything, it wouldn't help. Don't condemn their actual decency. It wasn't callousness. These are all manifestations of the same thing. What it was that even if they did anything, it wouldn't help. Life had taught them this. You see? And if human rationale could be equated to any single button successfully, it would be help. A person's actions are motivated by his feelings about help. Now, when you get a real full-blown criminal, politician, nuclear physicist, something like this, he knows the best way to help, and that's kill everybody. And the weird part of it is he thinks so. He really thinks so. He's crazy. But help has done a complete flip, and he still thinks it would help one and all. So don't shy off on the idea that man is basically bad or something of the sort or some other falsity. But man's ideas of how to do good can be quite weird because they can get quite aberrated on this subject of help. Well, that's the way to bust up these cases. You start fooling around with a case and hoping some other oblique formula will start the case rolling. It won't. What moves a case once you get a process running? It's help on something. That's what gets that case rolling. Well, so you can get the case rolling in pre-session just exactly the same way. Not very fast, but at least up there to a point where the person is sitting up and looking at you saying, you know, is there some bare possible chance that I might possibly participate in this possible session? And you can achieve that point of view. And you can achieve it just on your native wit and knowing that datum about help, that it's failure to help that's got him locked up. That's it. You can hit it. All right. The other thing that bars us down is 8C. And 8C, lack of. A person auditing early in the morning and late at night and that sort of thing up against somebody who can't help may get keyed in a little bit on not being able to help. And what he needs at that point is not to change the process, but to have somebody standing behind him saying, run it. And if you can get people to do what we know how to do now without faltering on the line, we win. We win hands down. Now you have possibly take that on faith at the moment. But you needn't take it on faith very long. You'll have very short order, both a subjective and objective reality on that point. We know what we're doing. And if we can get it done, you'll win. And then instead of going on a control basis, you'll take a look at it and you'll say, well, that's it, and that's what you have to do. I don't think anybody could beat you out of it with a club after that. Get the idea? All right. So 8C actually merely makes up for one, enough feeling of failure to help on the part of an auditor that he falters as he attempts to help. And makes up for the fact that he maybe does not yet know completely that what he is doing is the best thing he can do that will help the case. So those two factors, you see, make control necessary. Now, as soon as those factors are established, then control becomes unnecessary. Now, that's whither we are wending. There isn't any reason under the sun why you can't make it. Now, there is this. The other factor has always been with us, is that which the PC, that which the PC can do, you make him do better. His willingness and ability to do is slightly improved. Slightly improved, slightly improved, command by command by command. You got the idea? Now, he can talk. He can act. He can sit in a chair. He can do various things. And you look at any PC and find out what he can do. You can improve that ability. But the greatest ability in the whole human race and all amongst the livingness is the ability to help. And when you can improve that ability all the way up along the line, you've improved about all there is to improve about a person. It's very peculiar, but that's a fact. It is rather fantastic when you think about it. But improving that ability in the most rapid possible way makes it necessary for us to spot out and locate what it is in the case that, if improved, will cause the most increase of ability. And knowing that anatomy, then, why the sixth dynamic, from which all other dynamics are the inversion, is, of course, the most logical target. That is the target on which you can then proceed. But locating what part of that is accessible in the PC's run, or what he can tolerate as he runs it, you see, is all part of the same scheme of things. But basically, you get it on down the line, and you'll find out that it's motion, in actuality, which contains all of the elements that you're trying to run in the sixth dynamic. So if you can't run motion, you've got to run some other point to improve it up to the point where the person can tolerate a little motion. But this is, again, an improvement. You're working now with help. You're working with survive and succumb, desires to and goals. And you're working with the sixth dynamic. And those are the only factors you were working with. So look them over and don't make it look very complicated to yourself. And get it done. And once you see that it can be done, it won't be necessary for anybody to stand behind you and say, "Do it, do it, do it, do it, do it." You'll say, "Who the hell are you talking to? Of course I'll do it. What's the matter with you? I'm the one that's helping this PC. You aren't." Well, that's whither we are wending. I want you, when you buck into this next session and Monday morning, to just take a good look at your PC from the standpoint of failed help on your pre-session level. And then make sure that there's anything in the sixth dynamic that the PC can even vaguely help or confront. Why improve that up the line? You'll find out that if the PC can run motion, it will do him more good than the other elements of the sixth dynamic. But you could also get motion run by taking the other elements of the sixth dynamic, polishing each one of those up with help, with relatively short runs, and find that your PC could again run motion. I know that you can do this. I think, by the way, you're making very good progress. Nobody's being very critical of you. Jan this morning was rather dismayed, asking me pathetically about got all these cases assessed and they're running and so forth. And I said, "That's fine. Let's get them clear now." And she says, "But we've got some of these cases moving that have not moved before." And so I said, "I know. That's right. Well, let's get them clear." I'm a hard man to bargain with. That's all I'll settle for from this unit's clear. If you didn't clear your PC, you flunk. Thank you.